if somebody's looking at two firms that are otherwise equal, but one is in the cloud and one isn't, they're going to go with the firm that's in the cloud, but not just because it makes them more efficient, but also because it gives them a better lifestyle.
Hey, gang. Happy Monday, if such a thing even exists. I think the jury's still out on that. Anyway, welcome back to Future Proof. I am, as always, your host, Bill Sheridan. Episode 67 this week. Let's start, shall we, by taking a short trip back in time. I'm talking about the time when social media was this brand new thing, remember? Kind of mysterious, kind of cool. And for folks who jumped in early, full of opportunity. If you remember, LinkedIn got things rolling, I think it was 2002. Facebook followed in 04. YouTube came around in 05. Twitter in 06, you know? It seemed like one after the other. And the MACPA and the BLI, we weren't the first ones there, but we jumped in pretty early in the game. We launched our blog and joined LinkedIn and Facebook in 2007. I sent my first tweet in 08. Not long after that, I started speaking to accounting and finance groups about the power and potential that social media offered the profession. And I spoke and I spoke and I spoke over and over again to big groups, small groups, webcasts, webinars. More than 10 years later, I'm still asked to speak about this stuff, and not in an advanced strategic way either. People still want to know the basics, right down to things like, you know, creating an account and sending your first tweet. And I'm like, really? We're almost 20 years into the social era, and this is where you guys are with this stuff? And then I have to kind of check myself and say, hold on, this is accounting and finance we're talking about here. We tend to move much more deliberately, I guess is a kind way to put it, than the general population. In general, our profession isn't full of early adopters, right? And today, I kind of feel the same way about the cloud. We've been talking about the cloud for so long that it's easy to assume that everybody knows it and has figured out how to work there. And with our profession, that's the wrong assumption to make. There are exceptions, of course. There are some accounting and finance pros out there who take pride in getting ahead of new technologies early, but a sizable part of the population of our profession hasn't made that leap yet. So this week, I wanted to take a step back and assess kind of where we are in the profession when it comes to cloud adoption. And here to help me do that is my guest this week. He is Blake Oliver. He's definitely the cloud guy in our profession. He's director of product marketing at Flowcast, but more to the point for this week's show, he's the co-host of a weekly show called the Cloud Accounting Podcast and author of the Cloud Accounting Blog. We're going to talk all things cloud here in just a moment. First, let me tell you that this week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So, back to the cloud. I read an article recently in Accounting Today that made a great point. It said, quote, "Finance innovations have historically been met with apprehension. Even spreadsheets and ERP systems, which are standard tools today, took time to become commonly used. Humans are biologically hardwired to be wary of change. So it's understandable, that technological advances create discomfort. But," the article goes on to say, "accounting professionals who rise to meet the challenge that new technology presents are increasing their value to organizations and are being rewarded with opportunities to advance their careers." Now, the article cites a recent study among accounting and finance pros who identified several ways in which the cloud has improved their careers and their personal lives. And I'm quoting directly from the article here. It says, quote, "They reported increased work efficiency because of automation, the flexibility to work from any location, having less paper to manage, and requiring less training as software has become easier to use. Technology was also recognized," the article goes on to say, "as offering accountants broader career options, such as application architecture, Other benefits include reduced errors, more time for strategic work, having better controls, and improving the ability to do data mining and analytics. And multiple respondents mentioned that that technology has helped them become more valuable to their organization. And on the personal side, the article says, cloud technology also has benefits related to emotional well-being. Respondents whose jobs are fully integrated with technology are least likely to find their work stressful. They are also the least likely to think that the accounting profession is at risk of losing job security. Additionally, while accountants who embrace cloud technology are the most likely to say that they like to be known as a person who gets stuff done, they are also the most likely to say that work-life balance is important. And while this insight is interesting, it shouldn't be surprising since the use of cloud-based applications is likely to make accountants more productive while freeing up time. End quote. So, lots of benefits, obviously, to working in the cloud. And for our profession, especially, there's lots of opportunity as well because so many accounting and finance pros have yet to make that leap. And as you'll hear here in just a second, the implications of this stuff go way beyond mere technology. There's a direct link between your use of new technologies and your ability to attract new young talent. So listen up, folks. Some good stuff here from a guy who definitely knows his stuff. Here is Blake Oliver. Blake, thanks for being here today. We've been talking about cloud computing for years now. You know, where is this profession in terms of adoption at this point? I mean, we're notoriously slow, as you know, to adopt new stuff as it is, but it seems by now, most people should be in the cloud in some way. Are they at this point?
Well, first, thanks, Bill, for having me. It's great to be on. It's a great question. And I would say we're probably at the 50-50 point, right? Okay. Of course, it depends whether you're looking at small CPA firms, if you're looking at, you know, big ones, medium-sized, you know, regional firms, or also if you're looking at just like companies themselves, right? Are they on-premises, off-premises? I actually saw a great article in CFO Magazine recently at the end of 2018 called Cloud ERP, The Time Has Come. Mm-hmm. And there was a chart in there that said that currently 60% of companies have an on-premises IT strategy, right? So desktop, right, server-based. Yep. And 40% are off-premises, which would, you know, mean in the cloud.
Okay.
And in 2 years, that's going to flip. So it'll be 40% on-premises, 60% off-premises. And that's for overall cloud computing strategy, right? So I think that is, we're like right now at the tipping point.
Are we moving fast enough, do you think, at this point?
I've always wondered this myself. You know, why don't firms move faster? And I think the issue is that we're just too darn profitable, right? Like when you're making big bucks and your things are going well, why change, right?
Right. So
I think that the driver of change is going to be the talent shortage, right? The lack of CPAs. We haven't been making enough CPAs. Not enough people have been going into accounting to keep up with baby boomers retiring, with the economic growth that's happening. Mm-hmm. And so my theory is that the lack of talent or the shortage of talent is going to drive people to adopt new tech that makes them more efficient. And all of that is being developed in the cloud, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like cloud in and of itself has no value, right? Mm-hmm. It's everything you get from being in the cloud, which is being more efficient, being more productive, less cost, all that stuff. And up till now, there just really hasn't been enough of a reason, right?
Right. But it's interesting that you mentioned talent because reading between the lines of what you're saying, it sounds like not being there, having kind of legacy technology in-house could have a huge negative impact on your ability to attract new young talent. It's really kind of a retention and recruitment type of tool.
Well, yeah, I can tell you, I would not go work for a firm ever that didn't have a cloud strategy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a millennial. I'm 35, so I'm an elder millennial, mm-hmm. as I like to say. And, you know, I went to college using Google Apps, right? I never even had to email a Word document.
Right? Wow.
Until I got into the business world. And so for me, having to go to on-premises or to deal with desktop is a step backwards. And if you look at younger millennials, if you look at Gen Z, like that's even more pronounced for them. They just do not want to work in an environment that isn't efficient. It's painful. And so if somebody's looking at two firms that are otherwise equal, but one is in the cloud and one isn't, they're going to go with the firm that's in the cloud, but not just because it makes them more efficient, but also because it gives them a better lifestyle, right? Right. They can work remotely when they need to. They can go into the office when they need to. Right? Cloud is enabling that flexibility. We're getting away from the 8 to 5 in the office type mentality.
Yep.
And it's more just so results oriented, get your work done. I don't care if you come into work on Friday. You know, maybe I don't even care if you come to work on Monday.
Right.
Because if we're all working in the cloud and we can all see what's going on, it doesn't matter where we are. And I think that's actually been what's driven the cloud growth in the small firms has been the whole lifestyle aspect, right? A lot of partners running small firms just don't want to go to the office anymore. They want to be able to go to their vacation home. So, you know, that hasn't been such a big driver in regional or large firms, but I think it will start to be.
And the obvious result here is, you know, I mean, if this is a recruitment type of issue, those who aren't making that leap are their very survival is kind of a threat.
Yeah, well, and I tell people you won't be able to sell your firm, right? You're not going to be able to find somebody who wants to take it over, or you're not going to find somebody who's going to want to buy it, because why would they buy your firm with all of its outdated technology and clients who haven't yet been moved onto the cloud when it's easier for me just to go steal them from you, right?
Yeah, exactly. And is there a cultural aspect to this whole thing, this whole discussion as well? I mean, when we talk about what's keeping the laggards from making that jump, is part of it culture?
I think so, definitely. I hate to rag on baby boomers, but you know, my parents are boomers, and let's see, what's the nicest way to say it? It's a different culture in that baby boomers grew up in a business world in which you came to the office every day, you sat at your desk for a certain amount of time, and there was a clear distinction between work and personal life in many, many ways, right? Not just when it comes to technology, but also when it comes to how you conduct yourself.
Sure.
And that has all blurred now, right? I mean, you just look at the Me Too movement, right? You can no longer be a different person at work than you are, you know, behind the scenes.
Right.
It's just not possible. And with cell phones, the everybody can see what everybody's doing all the time, right? And I always think it's funny when people try to have two separate social media profiles, one for personal, one for work.
Right.
It just doesn't work.
No.
Right? People can see that it's fake. So that's a cultural shift that's happening where work and life is blending. People want to be, they want flexibility. Yep. And, you know, millennials are much more into this concept. Of I'm really the same person at work and at home, and I don't want to have this clear dividing line. And that I think that it, like, is weird to some folks who prefer that dividing line, right? They want to be able to go home and relax and not think about it. But I don't know. I personally like it. I like, and if you enjoy your job, right? Jobs are becoming more interesting as we automate the boring stuff. Then it's fun to think about it.
Sure. So how do we take steps toward bridging that kind of cultural gap there? How do we start to swing that culture the other way?
Well, so the biggest problem is a lot of managers are not comfortable managing employees unless they can see them working at their desk, right? Mm-hmm. They want to see butts in the seats because that to them means that person is working. And we know empirically, the evidence shows that that's not true, right? It's easy for me to goof off at home. It's also easy for me to goof off at my desk, maybe even easier, right? The guy who comes in first and leaves last is not necessarily the most productive. They're just the smart one. Or, you know what I used to do in public accounting?
Yeah.
I had a tool that would allow me to schedule emails. Mm-hmm. And so I would deliberately keep a handful of emails and then schedule those to go out late at night so that everybody thought I was working.
Right.
Yeah. So you, if you see your employees emailing you late at night, that doesn't mean they're working. That just means they're clever.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Right. That's true.
So what's the solution, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the solution is we need a way to track productivity that's better than hours, right? Either hours at your desk or hours on your timesheet. And I think there are companies out there. I work for one of them. I work for Flowcast. We are trying to build systems that allow you to manage work in the cloud without having to worry about those hours, because you can clearly see what everybody is assigned to, what they've delivered, what they are late on, right? And you get all those analytics that are way better than hours.
Right. Right. So that's really interesting. So there are some tech-based solutions that can actually help us better manage and track that type of productivity. Any examples of people or organizations who've done it right that you think have kind of successfully made that transition from, you know, laggards to not quite early adopters, but at least have kind of embraced the new?
I mean, these are not public accounting examples because, you know, these are customers at the Flowcast where I work. But, you know, we have hundreds of financial controllers use our software that have moved away from requiring their staff to come into the office.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big shift, right? Yeah. Because now they can see, you know, here are all the reconciliations assigned to somebody, and, you know, here's what's, they're on target, they're late, right? You can clearly see that they've done their job, and you don't really care if they're in the office, as long as they're getting the close done. And so a great example is Jerry Raphael over at Stack Overflow. Right? He's the VP of finance there in New York City. Stack Overflow is one of the biggest websites on the internet. And he manages a team that is in New York, London, and Germany as well. Don't remember exactly where. And, you know, he never sees these people in person.
Right.
And his accounting manager, who, you know, kind of handles the day-to-day, she works at home when she wants to. She actually took a two-month vacation this summer. Left the office for 2 months.
Wow.
She built up, they have a sabbatical policy there.
Uh-huh.
She had saved up a bunch of PTO. And, you know, they were able to, like, reassign all of her tasks within the system. Like,
amazing.
super powerful, right? And like that never, that when I tell people that story in person, their jaws kind of drop. Like the idea of an accounting manager being able to take off for 2 months, it doesn't, it's not built into our profession, right?
Yeah, no.
But it can be. Up in Canada, you've got Chad Davis running Live CA. They're a 40-person plus, you know, virtual accounting firm. The firm that I used to work for, that I was a partner in, HPC, recently acquired by Aprio, that was 25 people. We worked remotely all over the country, you know, all the way from Southern California up to New York State. Like, so it's doable. People are doing it.
It's becoming much more acceptable, even if it's not like widespread in this profession. There are more and more examples of people who are doing it successfully.
Yeah. And there's people who are doing it for two reasons, right? There's their lifestyle folks who just want to, you know, like go live wherever, you know, in a low-cost area and live a great lifestyle because their money goes further, or travel or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the people who really just want to, like, take over the world and scale up. And unfortunately, they keep getting bought by larger firms.
Right.
You know, being made partner there but because, you know, those larger firms want to acquire their knowledge and figure out how to do it themselves. So.
Yeah, that tends to happen too.
Yeah.
I actually heard a story of a small firm, on the East Coast, who hired a new employee remotely. This person was in Colorado, I think. And that person ended up working remotely from Colorado. So this is a small firm on the East Coast who hired a new employee and put them to work without ever having met them face to face. So
yes,
I mean,
I did that. I did that myself.
No kidding.
Yeah. I actually had an employee, I think, for something like 2 years who I never met in person, right?
Mm-hmm. which sounds crazy, but it can work.
Well, and here's one more thing that is driving the switch to cloud, and is probably the most important thing. It should be the most important thing. It's the clients, right? Mm-hmm. Clients are starting to demand this. And, you know, my evidence is really based on my own story, which is the firm I founded. It was called Cloudsourced Accounting. It was an online bookkeeping company. I started in 2011 or so. Mm-hmm. And you know, for those who don't know me, I am not in, my background was not in accounting when I got into it. I was a music major.
No, no kidding.
I play the cello, right? Nice. And I was very serious about it. I majored in cello, classical cello performance at Northwestern University. I thought I was going to be in an orchestra.
Wow.
And then I got out and I started doing auditions and I realized, oh man, this is not for me. The life of a starving musician is definitely not for me. And so I started doing bookkeeping, right? Mm-hmm. Like that was a day job. And it was like, hey, accounting, I hear that CPAs make a lot of money and they have a good lifestyle. Maybe I can do that and then do music on the side or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got into, I started going back to school and I started this little bookkeeping company called Cloudsourced Accounting. And we were in early zero partner doing cloud. We used bill.com. We used Expensify. We used Gusto. We're using all these apps that are in the cloud. I had virtual employees. Mm-hmm. I had clients that I never met in person.
Yeah.
And this is pretty early. Here's what is the evidence in my mind that this is a huge opportunity is the fact that I wasn't a CPA. I had really like very little accounting background at that point. I was just a talented, you know, bookkeeper who knew technology. Yep. And I was able to build a business that ended up having 12 people and 200 clients in the space of like 3 years.
Wow.
Right? And yep. And that's not because I knew what I was doing. I was making mistakes all over the place. It's because the other firms, my competition out there, weren't doing any of this.
Right. Right.
And so, hey, when you're one of the few people offering this kind of service, you're going to get a lot of business. And I think that customers are going to start demanding that.
Absolutely. And first of all, I think you probably knew more of what you were doing than you are giving yourself credit for. Hey, but I think also, I mean, this was the perfect time. I mean, it was kind of like the perfect storm. The technology had matured and the demand was there. So,
and the demand is growing every day. It is there, man.
It's kind of incredible the rate at which people are adopting this stuff. And we've been stressing for a while now the importance of accounting and finance pros learning new skills stay relevant today. You mentioned the fact that, you know, this stuff is automating all the boring stuff, so work has become kind of fun again. And those skills specifically, the ones we hear most often are the so-called, you know, soft skills, so that they can mm-hmm. focus on things that the machines can't do. But what about those digital skills? How can we go about picking up some of that digital knowledge that will better help us understand and utilize technologies like blockchain, like AI, that type of yep. stuff?
That is so hard right now. And I think that's where I had the advantage, right? Mm-hmm. Being a music major, I had to learn how to teach myself.
Right.
That is basically what sitting in a practice room is, right? You only get an hour with your professor, my cello professor. I got an hour with him every week and maybe a few more hours in a technique class with a bunch of other people. But that was it. Yep. The rest of the time, I had to be in the room and teach myself how to play these pieces and figure out how to do that.
Grind it out, yeah.
Yeah. And that I was able to use that knowledge to teach myself all these other applications, right? Because nobody was out there teaching you. And most of the companies aren't very good at teaching it themselves, right? They're software companies. They're not educators.
Yep.
So it's still a huge problem because the accounting education establishment, academia, I mean, you think CPA firms are behind? Just go look at academia.
Yeah.
the curriculum. When I took accounting, and I had to do it from the beginning because I had no business background in my undergrad. I did it and we had one QuickBooks class and it was an elective. Mm-hmm. I think not required. Like the workflows, diagrams that I had to create in my cost accounting class had tape backup drives. You know, I had to learn the symbol for a tape backup drive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pathetic. It is really pathetic. So here's what's holding firms back, right? The reason that these technology initiatives aren't working is because the staff, they're, you know, a lot of firms still have billable hours going on. The accountants are required to hit a certain target, and there's really not a lot of time built in for education,
mm-hmm.
if any, right? Staff are expected to do it on their own time,
right?
And this is the problem, is that technological innovation takes time. I wasted a ton of time. I mean, you could call it wasting it, but I don't. But you know, I would try things that didn't work. I would try applications that didn't work, and I'd have to pull them out and put in new ones. And it's hugely disruptive and takes a lot of time, but you finally get a recipe that works. You get a combination that works, and you know, it skyrockets your productivity. I went from spending, you know, 80% of my time on data entry as a bookkeeper to spending less than 20% of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. That was the revelation for me. And it was also the reason that, you know, I gave up hourly billing, because if I became more efficient with technology, I was cutting my own billings.
Yeah.
Right. That was,
yeah.
So I had to switch to a fixed fee model. If you ask me, the number one thing holding back firms from going cloud and becoming automated is the hourly billing. Right. Mm. Because your staff don't have time. Right. Yeah. They have no incentive to educate themselves. They have no incentive to become more efficient. If they become more efficient, it hurts them and it hurts the firm, because there are fewer billings.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding. Yeah. I'd never stopped to think about it that way, but you're right.
Yeah. I don't know how we get rid of the billable hour. That seems to be like just embedded in the consciousness.
That's a hard one. I mean, the whole value pricing conversation continues to grow and get louder.
Well, and the problem with value pricing is, like you said, it requires soft skills.
Right.
Right. Which we aren't taught. Yeah. It's this art of negotiation and listening to the customer, and it's very, very difficult. You know, I did it for years, and I still feel like I could learn more and more.
To a certain extent, it's on us to realize that the future of our careers depends on us learning new skills, and we've got to take that on and be responsible for it on our own.
Yep.
And become lifelong learners.
And you know, I tend to get a little aggressive with my recommendations, and I'll tell people, you have to get rid of your timesheets and abandon your, you know, hourly billing. And I understand that is not realistic at all, right? That is completely insane, and would probably destroy the firm. So my recommendation is, like, as a way to start, is to just keep the timesheets, but stop evaluating your staff primarily on their billable hours, like particularly when it comes to their bonus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Switch instead to something that values customer service, right? Start surveying your customers and find out which ones are happier, and then associate that with your staff, right? And the staff who keep the customers happier get their bonus, something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Net promoter score, customer service survey, whatever. Have them rate your staff. Because if the clients are happy, your firm will do well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that would be incentive to learn some of those skills that are going to help you keep them happy.
Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing to do would be, you know, try to do value pricing on more stuff, right? Gradually build it in to your services. Like, and it can be done very easily in tax, actually, right? Mm-hmm. Just take a look at all of the tax returns you do for, you know, segment your clients, and then just figure out what it is on average, right?
Right.
I mean, at HPC, I think we charged a flat fee for all of the business tax returns. And we knew that we'd, you know, if we looked at them individually, we'd be losing money on this one here. But man, we were making a killing on this one here, right?
Right.
So it all worked out in the end, and it just made things so much easier. Just charge one fee for every business tax return, one fee for every individual return. And you know, our clients were similar enough that it worked.
Interesting. Yeah, great advice. Yeah. What trends or issues are in this area or even others are you going to be following most closely this year? What do you think is on the horizon that maybe we haven't paid as much attention to but need to?
That's a great question. There are some things that I think we're paying way too much attention to, like blockchain. I think that the luster has worn off of that.
It is not hype cycle right now.
Yeah, and the price cratering has kind of, you know, helped people reset expectations. Mm-hmm. It's not going to eliminate audit. I don't know who said that originally, but if anything, it's going to make it more complex, because now you have to audit the blockchain, and that means developing the IT expertise and skills to be able to figure that out.
Right.
And it's not going to replace banking anytime soon. You know, supply chain is where it's going to come in really handy. But Like
we're seeing a lot of really interesting stuff happening with it. Beyond that, not quite so sure.
Yeah, so maybe that's more of a 5-10 year, even further out kind of thing. The thing that I am really worried about, that really concerns me, is automation, the impact of automation on professions outside of accounting, actually.
Mm-hmm. Such as what?
Well, look at self-driving cars, right? Mm-hmm. We have been on the cusp of a revolution in self-driving technology, and it is about to happen. At some point, really soon, within the next 5 years, we're going to have viable self-driving vehicles. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we already do. At this point, it might be more of a regulatory issue. Mm-hmm. So there are millions and millions of truck drivers, for instance, in this country. Automated trucks are a natural extension of self-driving technology, right? Mm-hmm. It could basically end that entire job.
Oh, yeah.
or significantly reduce it. And there are millions of more jobs that depend on like truck stops that support truck drivers, right? Yeah. So if you look at... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when you start thinking about extensions like that, you start driving yourself nuts. I mean, you could talk about the insurance industry. And,
yep.
Fewer people are getting injured in automobile accidents, then how is that going to impact insurance? How's it going to impact hospitals? How's it going to... I heard an interesting one the other day about the supply of organs for organ donation. With self-driving cars, it could not entirely dry up, but it would be significantly reduced. So drive yourself crazy thinking about stuff like that.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. There's an industry that relies on people getting into accidents, healthy people. Otherwise,
I know.
Yeah, it's going to be hugely disruptive, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens over the next few years. But, it's going to be great for accountants, actually. We are in a fantastic spot. It's incredible.
So how so? Why is this a good time for accountants?
Well, because we are a highly skilled profession. And if you look at all the stats on the need for highly skilled folks, right, people with college degrees, with professional certifications, that is just projected to grow and outpace demand dramatically. I mean, the consulting firm Korn Ferry put out a report last year called The Salary Surge that, analyzed this projected shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
It's global, by the way, right? It's because we're automating easy work, right? We're automating task-based work. But we are not going to be able to figure out how to create AIs that can do, the advanced work that a CPA would do or a CMA, right?
Okay.
So we're going to have a continued need for these kind of folks, and because of demographic shifts, the population isn't growing like it used to. People aren't having as many kids, right? We just aren't producing enough people to keep up with economic forces. So, if you are a CPA, you will have your pick of jobs, right?
Oh yeah. Yep.
And salaries are going to rise. Right? They've already started to. Korn Ferry says it could be as $8,300 more for each highly skilled worker by 2030. That's the stat that I read. And that's just for people with college degrees, right? If you have an advanced certification, it probably could be more, right? That's just an average number. So expect salaries to dramatically increase. And that is what's going to drive cloud. Because in the end, right, the people in charge look at the numbers, right? And partners in accounting firms are managers who really like to look at numbers. Mm-hmm. And that is what drives decision making. Mm-hmm. So when it gets really expensive to hire new staff, they're going to look for other ways to make their current staff more efficient and more, empower them. You can't solve the problem with just hiring more people.
And enter the cloud. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. That is what's going to drive cloud for the majority.
That's really interesting. It's going to be interesting to follow. It won't be boring. Let's put it that way.
it's going to be a really wild, kind of crazy next 20 years. And I feel really fortunate to be in the middle of my career at this point. It's really exciting.
Yeah,
right.
Well, absolutely. Well, Blake, thanks so much for your insights. Thanks for being here, and let's keep the conversation going. I'd love to catch up again sometime down the road and see how things have changed. So thanks.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, and I really love the podcast. So
thanks, Blake. I appreciate it.
That was Blake Oliver, co-host of a weekly show called The Cloud Accounting Podcast and author of The Cloud Accounting Blog. You can find out more by visiting blakeoliver.com. And if you want to learn more about the stuff, check out the course offerings from our sponsor, the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework, it's all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning. That's it, gang. Have a great week. Talk to you again next week.